You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Tonight, the 8-member Supreme Court released key decisions in the past week, with special attention focused on the issues of abortion rights and immigration. Robert Barnes of The Washington Post lays out the cases and explores how they could play out politically. That's tonight at 7 on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie.
First, one of the last barriers to serving in the military was lifted yesterday. The Pentagon announced the end of the ban that barred transgender Americans from serving in the U.S. military.
Here's Defense Secretary Ash Carter announcing the end of the ban after studying the possible integration of transgender Americans into the military.
Now, as a result of this year-long study, I'm announcing today that we're ending the ban on transgender Americans in the United States military. Effective immediately, transgender Americans may serve openly, and they can no longer be discharged or otherwise separated from the military just for being transgender. Additionally, I have directed that the gender identity of an otherwise qualified individual will not bar them from military service or from any accession program.
The new rule was considered a big win for advocates who have called for greater inclusion in the military, but the decision hasn't been without opposition. Republican chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Mac Thornberry, said that the move was prioritizing politics over policy.
Colonel Sherry Swakowski of Wisconsin joins us now in the studio. She's a retired U.S. Army colonel and highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. Sherry, thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be with you.
And with us on the phone is Aaron Belkin. He's the founding director of the Palm Center, a research institute that focuses on gender, sexuality, and the military. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
It's an honor.
Well, Sherry, let's start with you. And as someone who had served in the military under the regime that just ended now, what was your reaction to this news?
Oh, I was elated, and that's putting it mildly. This is just going to be such a wonderful thing for the 14,000 plus service members, transgender service members that are serving that can now serve openly.
You were a person who couldn't serve openly. You've told your story elsewhere, but can you share some of what that experience was like for you in the military?
It was very difficult. I was a career infantry officer, and being in the infantry is difficult enough, but not being able to be authentic, I was forced to suppress this deeply for decades just in order to be the best leader I could be.
Aaron, this policy has been in the works for some time now after some research and study went into it. Can you spell out how this works? What changes under this new announcement, and what's the timeline?
Well, what Secretary Carter said yesterday is that the ban is now lifted, and we have open service, and that's a historic change that strengthens the military. There will be a phased-in implementation. So as of yesterday, transgender people can serve openly in the military. They don't have to lie about who they are. The services are allowed to start providing medically necessary care, and in 90 days, the services will be required to provide medically necessary care. And then in a year, the enlistment regulation will be changed so that transgender identity is no longer a bar to service. But what's most critical is that this strengthens the military by allowing people to serve authentically.
How many people are we talking about who have been serving in the military, who are currently serving, and who might serve in the future?
There are different estimates, which is very common for social science. You know, you administer 5 presidential polls in one day, and you get slightly different numbers. But the range is between 2 and 15,500. So somewhere, you know, and you can take an estimate in the middle if you like. But so the number I use from the New England Journal of Medicine is 14,800, and there are approximately 134,000 transgender veterans.
And Aaron, part of the rule here is that transgender Americans would have to show that they've been, quote, stable, unquote, in their preferred gender for at least 18 months and show their transition is complete. That's as they're coming in. Can you explain that, of what exactly that means?
Yeah, that's actually not quite right. But I would like to say first that, you know, there are implementation details and there are footnotes and policy nuances to talk about, and I'll answer your question in a second. But what's most important about yesterday is that the ban is lifted and that open service is the new reality. And I think that's really important for people to remember. But in terms of how the policy works, it's not quite right that people are going to have to show medical stability for 18 months before getting into the military, because many transgender people do not need to transition Union and are already stable and fully fit for duty, and they will be welcomed into the military. It's only that if someone has started treatment for gender dysphoria, then there needs to be 18 months of medical stability. But just to contextualize that, the military attaches delays to all kinds of medical conditions because they want to make sure that people coming into the military are healthy. So if you have depression, you have to show that you're stable for several years before the military will let you in. And so the 18 months is very consistent with other military regulations.
We're talking about this announcement of the end of the transgender ban in the U.S. military that came out yesterday. Aaron Belkin with us from the Palm Center. Colonel Sherry Swakowski of Wisconsin, a U.S. Army retired with us. Sherry, let's bring you back in on this now. A criticism when a change like this is made, whether we're talking about the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, allowing women into combat roles, the end of this transgender ban now, is unit cohesion. There's a worry that this group, a new group or not newly openly serving group, could create some sort of conflict or tension in a military unit. How do you address a concern like that?
Well, I think the military actually teaches us to anticipate change, to accept it, to commit to it, and then go on and continue performing the mission. And I fully expect this to happen the same way. I don't really think it's going to be a big thing. When Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, we didn't really see a blip on the radar screen after that, and I think this will occur the same way.
If you were still on active duty now, how would this, as you see it, as you look back, have improved your experience, maybe even your performance as an officer?
Exactly. I often think back and wonder, had I been allowed to transition, be authentic, be myself while serving the federal government and the Army, how much better of a, not only an NCO and officer, but how much better of a human being I would have been.
Aaron, can you talk a little bit about the road to yesterday's announcement? How long was this in the works? How many people like Sherry were working on this issue?
Well, service members started to challenge the constitutionality of the ban in court many decades ago, more than 30 years ago. But that having been said, the issue really wasn't part of the national policy conversation during the Don't Ask, Don't Tell years, and there were reasons for that I can I'm glad to discuss. But it was only about 3 years ago, when Kristen Beck first told her story to the country, that the conversation was amplified up to the national level, and you started to see an organized campaign to change the policy. So given the many decades it took to achieve equality for other groups, this was a very fast campaign.
Aaron, as we mentioned, Mac Thornberry, Republican chair of the House Armed Services Committee, said this is putting politics over policy. This is a symbolic political feel-good from the Democratic side, not really considering the effects on the military. On the Senate side of things, Senator John McCain, not so critical, but he says he wants to hold hearings, wants to talk to the leaders of the armed forces. Do you think there's going to be political backlash? Do you think there's going to be enough that this policy announced yesterday may not be the end of the story?
No. Secretary Carter announced very clearly that he consulted with and got buy-in from the top leaders of the services, and I think that they understand quite well. In fact, General Milley said a few weeks ago at the confirmation hearing for Army Secretary Fanning that anyone who's qualified to do the job should be allowed to serve in the military. And I think people understand quite well that what undermines military readiness is when people have to live a lie, and what undermines unit cohesion and military readiness is when the troops don't get medically necessary care. So it's really the ban that was undermining military readiness, and that's what the research shows. That's what we learned under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's what foreign militaries learned. So anyone who's concerned about military readiness, as the chiefs are, understand that yesterday's move is a move in the direction to promote readiness.
And Sherry?
Yes, and Aaron is exactly right. You know, we already know that transgender service members are some of the top rated in their units at their job. So when you take that and you allow them to be authentic and to serve as themselves and obtain the medically necessary care, their job performance is going to improve. And that can only help increase individual and subsequently unit readiness.
We're talking about the Pentagon's recent announcement of an end to the ban that barred transgender Americans from serving in the military. We're talking with Colonel Sherry Swakowski of Wisconsin, retired Army colonel and highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. Also with us, Aaron Belkin, founding director of the Palm Center, a research institute that focuses on gender, sexuality, and the military.
And we want to hear from you. Are you someone who's been excluded or had difficulty entering the military because of your gender or your sexual orientation? You can call us now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. If you're a current or former member of the military, tell us how inclusive you had your experience was. And what do you think of the military's decisions over the past few years lifting the don't ask, don't tell policy or more openness to women in combat roles? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
More coming up in just a few moments here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation now with Aaron Belkin, founding director of the Palm Center, a research institute that focuses on gender, sexuality, and the military, and Sherry Swakowski, retired Army colonel and highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. We're looking at the Pentagon's announcement that it would lift the ban on transgender Americans serving in the military. That came out yesterday.
And we want to hear from you on this. Are you a veteran or a current member of the armed services? What did you think of the announcement from Secretary Carter lifting the ban? Do you think the military is becoming more open and inclusive to the LGBT community and to women? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think of some of the specific stipulations in the new rules, like having a stable gender identity or 18 months before enlisting? You can call us at 800-642-1234.
And Aaron, I wanted to ask, you mentioned at one point other militaries, foreign militaries, who have maybe been through this already. Can you talk about what this process has looked like elsewhere in the world?
Sure. And that was one of the critical elements, I think, in helping military leaders and Washington leaders understand that inclusive policy promotes readiness, was to look at the 18 foreign militaries that have allowed transgender personnel to serve openly. And those include militaries that we respect very much and work with closely, Britain, Israel, Canada, Australia. So 18 foreign militaries. And those militaries have not reported problems. There's been no compromise to unit cohesion or morale or readiness or anything like that, which, by the way, also mirrors the experiences of federal agencies such as the CIA and the FBI, all of which allow transgender personnel to serve. So the military was really behind the times here and was the only remaining entity in the entire government that still required discrimination until yesterday.
And Sherry, we've talked about your own experience in the military some. Is this something you've heard from people, the ban that just ended yesterday, that kept people from going in the military, people who might otherwise have been well qualified for it?
I don't know personally anybody who has not been able to serve. I do know personally some highly trained and very intelligent individuals that were discharged because of being transgender and just in the past 3 or 4 years.
Do you think that that led to a lot of fear among people who couldn't openly serve under their gender identity, that it would be discovered somehow they might be ousted from the military?
Well, exactly. What's happened, this has been a very collaborative effort between DOD and the medical experts and advocacy groups like the Palm Center and SPARTA. But the real heroes of this are the brave transgender men and women who are serving on active duty and in the reserve components currently, who have pushed the issue by coming out to their commands over the last 2 years. They're the real heroes here.
Aaron, I want to talk a little more about the study process that Sherry was just talking about. This was first announced in the neighborhood of a year ago that this process was starting. Can you talk a little more about what went into that that led to yesterday's decision?
Well, the Pentagon did a very careful analysis, and they also commissioned the RAND Corporation, which is a highly respected military think tank that was created by the Air Force a generation ago. They asked the RAND Corporation to do a separate study. So there were two comprehensive study processes going on in the military and then in the RAND Corporation. And RAND generated its report, and they found that repeal of the ban would not compromise readiness and would be uncomplicated to implement and would have no implications for cost. RAND didn't find any disadvantages, and I think that research, which also followed the other research that had already been done by, for example, retired generals and admirals and former U.S. Surgeons General and other scholars and leading experts, there was a mountain of evidence all confirming the same point, which is that inclusive policy promotes readiness. And I think that it was just so impressive to see the Pentagon make policy on the basis of data and reason and evidence instead of the old model under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when policy was driven by fear and emotion rather than evidence.
Sherry, do you have a message maybe for people out there listening, might be transgender themselves in the military, thinking of going into the military? What would you say to them on the day after this announcement?
I would say that the military is a wonderful organization to belong to, and the fact that you are transgender can no longer hold you back from entry and serving authentically.
And what does this mean to you this week? This is something you've been looking for a long time as a veteran, as somebody who lived, served in the military under the old regime. Talk about just, I guess, the emotional impact that you feel about this.
It's been very emotional. And as you said, we've been working on this for several years. And the winners in this, of course, are the people that are serving on active duty now and the people that are going to serve on active duty in the future.
We'll leave it there for now. Sherry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Aaron, thanks for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Colonel Sherry Swakowsky. She's a retired U.S. Army colonel, the highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. Also with us by phone was Aaron Belkin, founding director of the PALM Center. That's a research institute that focuses on gender, sexuality, and the military. They talked to us about this announcement yesterday from the Pentagon that put an end to the longstanding ban on transgender Americans serving in the military. Got a link to some information about that, by the way, over at the Central Time Facebook page. You can share your thoughts, maybe share your experiences serving in the military while you're looking at that.